Chapter 22. Holden. The secret landing pad lay in the hollow of a small crater. When Holden crested the lip and saw the Rocinante below him, the sudden and dizzying release of tension told him how frightened he'd been for the last several hours. But the Rosie was home, and no matter how hard his rational mind argued that they were still in terrible danger, home was safe. As he paused a moment to catch his breath, the scene was lit with bright white light, like someone had taken a picture. Holden looked up in time to see a fading cloud of glowing gas in high orbit. People were still dying in space just over their heads.
"Wow,"
Prax said. "It's bigger than I expected."
"Corvette," Amos replied, obvious pride in his voice. "Frigate-class fleet escort ship."
"I don't know what any of that means," Prax said. "It looks like a big chisel with an upside-down coffee cup on the back."
Amos said, "That's the drive."
"Enough,"
Holden cut in.
"Get to the airlock."
Amos led the way, sliding down the crater's icy wall, hunched down on his heels and using his hands for balance. Prax went next, for once not needing any help. Naomi went third, her reflexes and balance honed by a lifetime spent in shifting gravities. She actually managed to look graceful. Holden went last, fully prepared to slip and go down the hill in a humiliating tumble, then pleasantly surprised when he didn't. As they bounded across the flat floor of the crater toward the ship, the outer airlock door slid open, revealing Alex in a suit of Martian body armor and carrying an assault rifle. As soon as they were close enough to the ship that they could cut through the orbital radio clutter, Holden said,
"Alex, man, is it good to see you."
"Hey, Cap,"
Alex replied, even his exaggerated drawl not able to hide the relief in his voice.
"Wasn't sure how hot this LZ would be. Anyone chasing you?"
Amos ran up the ramp and grabbed Alex in a bear hug that yanked him off his feet.
"Man, it's fucking good to be home," he said.
Prax and Naomi followed, Naomi patting Alex on the shoulder as she went by.
"You did good, thank you."
Holden stopped on the ramp to look up one last time. The sky was still filled with the flashes and light trails of ongoing battle. He had the sudden visceral memory of being a boy back in Montana, watching massive thunderheads flash with hidden lightning. Alex watched with him, then said,
"It was a bit hectic coming in."
Holden threw an arm around his shoulder. "Thanks for the ride." Once the airlock had finished cycling and the crew had removed their environment suits and armor, Holden said,
"Alex, this is Prax Mung. Prax, this is the solar system's best pilot, Alex Kamal."
Prax shook Alex's hand.
"Thank you for helping me find May."
Alex frowned a question at Holden, but a quick shake of the head kept him from asking it.
"Nice to meet you, Prax."
"Alex," Holden said, "get us warmed up for liftoff, but don't take off until I'm up in the co-pilot's chair."
"Roger," Alex said, and headed toward the bow of the ship.
"Everything's sideways," Prax said, looking around at the storage room just past the inner airlock door.
"The Rosie doesn't spend much time on her belly like this," Naomi said, taking his hand and leading him to the crew ladder, which now appeared to run across the floor. "We're standing on a bulkhead, and that wall to our right is normally the deck."
"Grew up in low grav and don't spend much time on ships, apparently," Amos said. "Man, this next part is really gonna suck for you."
"Naomi," Holden said, "get to ops and get belted in. Amos, take Prax to the crew deck and then head down to engineering and get the Rosie ready for a rough ride."
Before they could leave, Holden put a hand on Prax's shoulder.
"This takeoff and flight is going to be fast and bumpy. If you haven't trained for a high-G flight, it will probably be very uncomfortable."
"Don't worry about me," Prax said, making what he probably thought was a brave face.
"I know you're tough. You couldn't have survived the last couple of weeks otherwise. You don't have anything to prove at this point. Amos will take you to the crew deck. Find a room without a name on the door. That will be your room now. Get in the crash couch and buckle in. Then hit the bright green button on the panel to your left. The couch will pump you full of drugs that will sedate you and keep you from blowing a blood vessel if we have to burn hard.
My room, Prax said, an odd note in his voice.
We'll get you some clothes and sundries once we're out of this shit. You can keep them here.
My room, Prax repeated.
Yeah, Holden said, your room.
He could see Prax fighting down a lump in his throat, and he realized what the simple offer of comfort and safety probably meant to someone who'd been through what the small botanist had over the last month. There were tears in the man's eyes.
Come on, let's get you settled in, Amos said, leading Prax aft toward the crew deck.
Holden headed the other way, past the ops deck where Naomi was already strapped down into a chair at one of the workstations, then forward into the cockpit. He climbed into the co-pilot's seat and belted in.
5 minutes, he said over the ship-wide channel.
So, Alex said, dragging the word out to two syllables while he flicked switches to finish the pre-flight check. We're looking for someone named May?
Prax's daughter.
We do that now? Seems like the scope of our mission is creeping a bit.
Holden nodded. Finding lost daughters was not part of their mandate. That had been Miller's job. And he'd never been able to adequately explain the certainty he felt that this lost little girl was at the center of everything that had happened on Ganymede.
I think this lost little girl is at the center of everything that's happened on Ganymede, he said with a shrug.
Okay.
Alex replied, then hit something on a panel twice and frowned.
Huh, we have a red on the board, getting a no seal on the cargo airlock. Might have caught some flak on the way down, I guess. It was pretty hot up there.
Well, we're not going to stop and fix it now, Holden said. We keep the bay in vacuum most of the time anyway. If the inner hatch into the cargo area is showing a good seal, just override the alarm and let's go.
Roger.
Alex said, and tapped the override.
1 minute, Holden said over the ship-wide, then turned to Alex.
So I'm curious.
About,
how'd you manage to slip through that shitstorm up above us, and can you do it again on the way out?
Alex laughed. Simple matter of never being higher than the second highest thread on anyone's board. And, of course, not being there anymore when they decide to get around to you.
I'm giving you a raise, Holden said, then began the 10-second countdown. At one, the Rossi blasted off of Ganymede on four pillars of superheated steam.
Rotate us for a full burn as soon as you can, Holden said, the rumble of the ship's takeoff giving him an artificial vibrato.
This close?
There's nothing below us that matters, Holden said, thinking of the remnants of black filament they'd seen in the hidden base.
Melt it.
Okay,
Alex said. Then, once the ship had finished orienting straight up, he said,
Giving her the spurs.
Even with the juice coursing through his blood, Holden blacked out for a moment. When he came to, the Rossi was veering wildly from side to side. The cockpit was alive with the sounds of warning buzzers.
Whoa, honey,
Alex was saying under his breath.
Whoa, big girl.
Naomi, Holden said, looking at a confusing mass of red on the threat board and trying to decipher it with his blood-starved brain. Who's firing at us?
Everyone.
She sounded as groggy as he felt.
Yeah,
Alex said, his tension draining some of the good old boy drawl out of his voice.
She's not kidding.
The swarm of threats on his display began to make sense, and Holden saw they were right. It looked like half of the inner planet ships on their side of Ganymede had lobbed at least one missile at them. He entered the command code to set all the weapons to free fire and sent control of the aft PDCs to Amos.
Amos, cover our asses.
Alex was doing his best to keep any of the incoming missiles from catching them, but ultimately, that was a lost cause. Nothing with meat inside it could outrun metal and silicon.
Where are we? Holden said, stopping to target a missile that wandered into the front starboard PDC's firing arc. The point defense cannon fired off a long burst at it. The missile was smart enough to turn sharply and evade, but its sudden course change bought them a few more seconds.
Callisto's on our side of Jupiter, Alex said, referring to the next sizable moon out from Ganymede. Gonna get in its shadow.
Holden checked the vectors of the ships that had fired at them. If any of them were pursuing, Alex's gambit would only buy them a few minutes. But it didn't appear they were. Of the dozen or so that had attacked them, over half were moderately to severely damaged, and the ones that weren't were still busy shooting at each other.
Seems like we were everyone's number one threat there for a second, Holden said, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, sorry about that, Cap. Not sure why that happened.
I don't blame you, Holden said.
The Rosie shuddered, and Amos gave a whoop over the ship-wide comm.
Don't be trying to touch my girl's ass!
Two of the closer missiles had vanished off the threat board.
Nice work, Amos, Holden said, checking the updated times to impact and seeing that they'd bought another half minute.
Shit, Cap, the Rosie does all the work, Amos said. I just encourage her to express herself.
Going to duck and cover around Callisto, I'd appreciate a distraction, Alex said to Holden.
Okay, Naomi, another 10 seconds or so, Holden said. Then hit them with everything you've got. We'll need them blind for a few seconds.
Roger, Naomi said.
Holden could see her prepping a massive assault package of laser clutter and radio jamming. The Rosinante lurched again, and the moon Callisto suddenly filled Holden's forward screen. Alex hurtled toward it at a suicidal rate, flipping the ship and hard burning at the last second to throw them into a low, slingshot orbit.
3, 2, 1,
now, he said, the Rosie diving tail first toward Callisto, whipping past it so low that Holden felt like he could have reached out the airlock and scooped up some snow. At the same time, Naomi's jamming package hammered the sensors of the pursuing missiles, blinding them while their processors worked to cut through the noise. By the time they'd reacquired the Rosinante, she'd been thrown around Callisto by gravity and her own drive in a new vector and at high speed. Two of the missiles gamely tried to come about and pursue, but the rest either limped off in random directions or slammed into the moon. When their two pursuers had gotten back on course, the Rosie had opened up an enormous lead and could take her time shooting them down.
We made it, Alex said.
Holden found the disbelief in his pilot's voice fairly disconcerting. Had it been that close?
Never doubted it, Holden said. Take us to Tycho, half a G. I'll be in my cabin.
When they were finished, Naomi flopped onto her side in their shared bunk, sweat plastering her curly black hair to her forehead. She was still panting. He was, too.
That was vigorous, she said.
Holden nodded, but didn't have enough air to actually speak yet. When he climbed down the ladder from the cockpit, Naomi had been waiting, already out of her restraints. She'd grabbed him and kissed him so hard his lip had split. He hadn't even noticed. They barely reached the cabin with their clothes on. What had happened afterward was a sort of blur now to Holden, though his legs were tired and his lip hurt. Naomi rolled across him and climbed out of the bunk. I've got to pee, she said, pulling on a robe and heading out the door. Holden just nodded to her, still not quite capable of speech. He shifted over to the middle of the bed, stretching out his arms and legs for a moment. The truth was, the Rosie's cabins were not built for two occupants, least of all the crash couches that doubled as beds. But over the course of the last year, he'd spent more and more time sleeping in Naomi's cabin until it sort of became their cabin, and he just didn't sleep anywhere else anymore.
They couldn't share the bunk during high-G maneuvers, but so far they'd never been asleep any time the ship had needed to do high-G maneuvering. A trend that was likely to continue. Holden was starting to doze off when the hatch opened and Naomi came back in. She tossed a cold, wet washcloth onto his belly.
"Wow, that's bracing," Holden said, sitting up with a start.
"It was hot when I left the head with it."
"That," Holden said while he cleaned up, "sounded very dirty."
Naomi grinned, then sat on the edge of the bunk and poked him in the ribs.
"You can still think of sex? I would have thought we got that out of your system."
"A close brush with death does wonderful things for my refractory period." Naomi climbed into the bunk next to him, still wrapped in her robe.
"You know," she said, "this was my idea, and I'm all in favor of reaffirming life through sex. Why do I get the feeling that there's a but missing at the end of that sentence?"
"But, ah, there it is. There's something we need to talk about, and this seems a good time."
Holden rolled over onto his side, facing her, and pushed up onto one elbow. A thick strand of hair was hanging in her face, and he brushed it back with his other hand.
"What did I do?" he said.
"It's not exactly anything you've done," Naomi said. "It's more what we're heading off to do right now."
Holden put his hand on her arm, but waited for her to continue. The soft cloth of her robe clung to the wet skin beneath it.
"I'm worried," she said, "that we're flying off to Tycho to do something really rash."
"Naomi, you weren't there. You didn't see."
"I saw it, Jim, through Amos's suit cam. I know what it is. I know how much it scares you. It scares the hell out of me, too."
"No," Holden said, his voice surprising him with its anger.
"No, you don't. You weren't on Eros when it got out. You never..."
"Hey, I was there. Maybe not for the worst of it, not like you," Naomi said, her voice still calm. "But I did help carry what was left of you and Miller to the medbay. And I watched you try to die there. We can't just accuse Fred of..."
"Right now, and I mean right now, Ganymede could be changing."
"No, yes, it could.
We could be leaving a couple million dead people behind right now who don't know it yet. Melissa and Satichai, remember them? Now think of them stripped down to whatever pieces the protomolecule finds most useful at the moment. Think of them as parts. Because if that bug is loose on Ganymede, then that's what they are."
"Jim," Naomi said, a warning in her voice now, "this is what I'm talking about. The intensity of your feelings isn't evidence. You're about to accuse a man who's been your friend and patron for the last year of maybe killing an entire moon full of people. That isn't the Fred we know. And you owe him better than that."
Holden pushed up to a sitting position, part of him wanting to physically distance himself from Naomi, the part of him that was angry with her for not sympathizing enough.
"I gave Fred the last of it. I gave it to him. And he swore right to my face he'd never use it. But that's not what I saw down there. You call him my friend, but Fred has only ever done what would advance his own cause. Even helping us was just another move in his political game."
"Experiments on kidnapped children?" Naomi said. "A whole moon, one of the most important in the outer planets, put at risk and maybe killed outright? Does that make any sense to you? Does that sound like Fred Johnson?"
"The OPA wants Ganymede even more than either inner planet does," Holden said, finally admitting the thing he'd feared since they'd found the black filament. "And they wouldn't give it to him."
"Stop," Naomi said.
"Maybe he's trying to drive them off, or he sold it to them in exchange for the moon. That would at least explain the heavy inner planets traffic we've been seeing."
"No, stop," she said. "I don't want to sit here and listen to you talk yourself into this."
Holden started to speak, but Naomi sat up facing him and gently put her hand over his mouth.
"I didn't like this new Jim Holden you've been turning into. The guy who'd rather reach for his gun than talk. I know being the OPA's bag man has been a shitty job, and I know we've had to do a lot of pretty rotten things in the name of protecting the belt, but that was still you. I could still see you lurking under the surface, waiting to come back. Naomi, he said, pulling her hand away from his face. This guy who can't wait to go all high noon in the streets of Tycho? That's not Jim Holden at all. I don't recognize that man, she said, then frowned. No, that's not right. I do recognize him. But his name was Miller. For Holden, the most awful part was how calm she was. She never raised her voice, never sounded angry. Instead, infinitely worse, there was only a resigned sadness. If that's who you are now, you need to drop me off somewhere. I can't go with you anymore, she said. I'm out.